Discussions with Ajahn Suchin in Bangkok and Gangajan, January 2012. Recorded and edited by Jonathan and Sarah. Speakers include Phil, Jessica, Sarah, Robert, Sukin, Jonathan, and other friends.
We were just having a spirited discussion here earlier.
Yeah, recently John and Sarah sort of said, well, there's no real difference whatever one's doing. If one's trying to have understanding, if one thinks discussing Dharma is going to give you understanding, if reading an Abhidharma book is going to give you understanding, or chanting scriptures, or memorizing the Tipitaka, or standing on one leg for 5 years, whatever. And I showed a picture of a guy in India who for 32 years he's held his hand up in the air by the river Ganges. He's a sadhu. He thinks that's the path. And they're saying, if one really thinks it's the activity, the outward activity, that's going to give you the path, that's going to develop understanding, then one's got the wrong attitude and the wrong understanding from the beginning. And I was trying to say, well, I think some activities are really wrong, but other activities are
less wrong.
Not wrong, maybe.
So the question is?
So the question is, who is right?
It depends on right now, at this very moment. Mm-hmm. No matter what brings understanding of reality right now, it's right.
Okay. Is any activity useful?
It doesn't matter, because now reality appears, but it depends on how much one understands it as not self. One by one, each one. Like seeing now. Is there any glimpse of understanding that it is a reality? One reality in the circle of birth and death, samsaravata. Nothing is missing, otherwise that's the end of samsaravata. But there is no understanding of anyone, no matter one stands 5 hours, 5 years, or 1 hour. Or 1 minute, it depends on right understanding only.
Would someone with right understanding think that standing on one leg
is... Of what? Right understanding of standing one leg or what? With one leg?
Just right understanding of what is
now,
right of the past.
Reality right now. What reality is the object of understanding right now? How come to have such understanding? It cannot just arise by itself, without any conditions, out of the blue. No.
So what are the conditions?
Without the teachings, who can understand reality right now? If anyone can, is it not the underestimation of the right understanding of the virtuous Buddha?
So why don't people who listen to true Dharma or study Abhidharma say, so many of them don't seem to get right understanding?
It depends on what one understands by the term Abhidharma. Why Dhamma is Abhidharma? Is Abhidharma different from Dhamma? Or is just the qualification or quality of Dhamma?
Just the qualification.
Mm-hmm. And I think the point that we were trying to make is if one reads the Abhidharma, even in Pali, if there's no understanding at all, then it's useless, just like standing on one's leg or going to a meditation retreat or anything else, because there's no understanding.
It not understanding even the word Abhidharma.
So, Chan, what you're saying is that the point of studying is to understand the reality, and it's therefore useless to talk in terms of one activity being better than another, one more wrong, one right.
Can anyone say Abhidharma without any understanding at all?
Yes.
So, is that the understanding of Dharma?
No.
So, what is the use of not understanding, but just saying Abhidharma? Say. Mm-hmm.
So, Kim, if your friend said, oh, I'm going off to the jungle to meditate for the rest of my life, what would you say to him?
Of course, I'm not going to course, me being me, I will have a go at saying how wrong it is. But I don't think it's useful just saying that. The only right approach is to point to realities.
Can we say that from birth to death, we speak that which we do not understand at all? Until there is the understanding of reality right now. Without having heard the teaching, it's impossible for anyone to understand reality as it is. For example, what is forest? See, we just talk about it.
A place with lots of trees.
And what's tree?
The point is, I think that whether in the forest or here, still seeing is still hearing, still like, dislike, so comes back to the understanding at this moment. So if someone says they're going off to the forest, okay, there can be understanding, just like now. So it's not a matter of saying go there or don't go there, or read the Abhidhamma or don't read the Abhidhamma. It's a matter of understanding reality now, at each moment, rather than saying these are the activities one should follow. Because the more understanding, the less it matters where one goes or what the activity is, whether one's standing on one leg or not.
Okay. I sometimes feel like that here or on DSG, you might say to the guy who's saying, right, I'm going to live in the forest, you technically will say what you just said, but you would also say you can just understand wherever you are, why do you want to go to the forest?
I do actually stress a lot, even to those people. It's about seeing now, hearing now. It's not about reading Vatana. It's not about understanding Pali.
So
it
anything
is
that takes you away
from
the
this moment is wrong.
Is it agreed, Ajahn? Even studying Patana?
What's the point of studying?
To understand the moment.
Right? So, if we are talking about seeing and you think a lot about forest, no way to come back to understand seeing right now.
Okay.
Talking about understanding words, I've been reflecting quite a lot about karma recently, partly because a close friend had a bad accident and is in a coma and so on. But actually, we talk a lot about karma, but if there's no understanding of realities at this moment, if there's no understanding of seeing and hearing now as a result of karma, then actually on a conventional level, when we say someone's had an accident or experienced the floods or something as a result of karma, it doesn't actually make any sense at all. Sometimes you say, well, this is just understanding karma on a conventional level, but I wonder if there's any value in it at all, because it seems that really to understand karma or vipaka, there has to just be the understanding of realities now, no person who experiences any result, just moments.
It depends on the listener. If they cannot understand reality at all, what about understanding the cause and the effect?
Okay. So it just depends on the degree of understanding. Mm-hmm. But actually, it doesn't make any sense unless there is an understanding of realities. For example, people think the bad things happen because of others' bad deeds or the weather conditions or the politicians or something. But actually, it's only when one understands more about dharmas, kusala, akusala, and the vipaka, cheetahs now, that actually karma makes any sense. So anything else seems quite meaningless.
That person still does not know Buddha at all.
So when we talk about how before the Buddha's time people might have understood karma just on conventional level, actually it's not really any understanding of karma, because there's no understanding of paramatta dharmas.
But one cannot know the accumulation of anyone at all.
Well, I would think that maybe the understanding, maybe not about paramatta dhammas, but as Ajahn was saying, it's acknowledging the cause and effect. So you may not be able to distinguish moments of karma from vipaka and know which is cause and which is result. But there is some acceptance, you know.
I have one or two questions that friends asked about before. For example, one American friend said that with regard to the belief in the effects of karma as well, that a good or evil thought or action will have consequences in future vipaka, I understand the concept but have a hard time fully subscribing to this as it's difficult to observe. Do you have any comment?
That person does not understand the accumulation of kilesa and the accumulation of karma. Just like coffee, can it bring any result, vipaka?
Bring any result? Coffee?
But it accumulates the taste of coffee.
Oh. So the more we drink coffee, the more we'll like it.
Yeah.
I find that to be true.
Yeah. Little by little, one moment to another moment.
This is our jina karma, habitual karma that accumulates and so that eventually it can bring its results.
But whenever vipaka arises, it's from kamma, paccaya, and upanisya paccaya, both.
And another question that a friend finds difficult is usually, for example, when we read about paticca samuppada, or when we talk about karma, it is with regard to bringing results in future lives, just like the seeing.
Or this life.
But mostly, for example, if we talk about the seeing and hearing now, it is result of karma from previous lives.
Or this life too.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So the karma that brings result in this life is usually just the weaker...
That which has been done.
Just that which has been done. So we can't say the seeing or hearing is just the result of karma from past lives, maybe from this life too.
That's why there are different degrees of the vipaka, which is produced by karma, in this life, or next life, or other lives after next life.
The one that is brought about in this life, is it the Dita Dharma, the Dhamya Karma, the one that is the result of the first Jhavana Citta? This one?
Yeah.
So this is meant to be weaker karma, isn't it?
It can produce only in this life.
Only in this life.
But the other karma can produce in this life and future life.
Yeah.
So there's because some of the karma we do in this life is the strong one and some is the weak one. But both can give result in this life. Is that right, Ajahn?
It depends on whether it's the first jhavana or the second to the sixth.
The second jhavana can give result future life but also this life.
The first one is in this life, the last one is next life, and the rest for the lives to come.
Lives to come only.
Well, only those middle ones, also this life, right? They can give result also in this life?
Only the first.
Only the first one, really?
Yeah. Dita Dharma.
Only the first one gives the result.
Just
in this
part
life.
Of seven. Oh. So the rest can produce straight. So
And those ones don't produce ever in this life. They only produce.
The second one?
Yeah, the second, third, fourth, fifth. Only for future life.
Right.
I didn't know that.
The first one is the weak.
Only the first one is giving result in this life.
And the last one, next life.
Okay.
According to the strength of the karma, the first and the last is weaker.
Okay.
And does this mean that the first, if it does not produce in this life, will never produce?
Never.
It is a function of the other moment.
No worries, plenty of others, the second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, can do the... Something I found, remember a long time ago I talked about red fish. There was a novice monk, he was ready to become an arahant, and red fish was very suitable for him for developing samatha. So he asked his preceptor, Sariputta, bring me some red fish, I'm going back to my room. And Sariputta didn't say anything, just went out and found some red fish on the alms round and brought it back to the novice monk. But in the meantime, the novice monk already attained arahantship. Anyway, I found that passage in the Dhammapada Tathagata. Someone was a little bit, they hadn't heard of that, they said, when I brought it up before. But I found the actual...
Have you heard, Kunsuke?
I read Robert, I think, once before. But Thakatha?
It's a definite quote. I can get it on the computer if you like. It's in the Dhammapada Thakatha.
Yes, on the Dita Dhamma Vidanya Karma, which only brings result in this life, and my friend said that when he didn't have much understanding of the teachings and was living quite heedlessly, it was only because he read about how karma could have result in this life that it actually deterred him from doing harm. So people find it quite important whether karma can bring result in this life. But of course this is just a kind of fear of the consequences. And just to clarify, this Dita Dhamma Vidanya Karma, it's not strong enough to cause birth, but it's strong enough to cause rupas such as eye sense or visible object. Is that correct?
What about Soraya? The karma of this life, or what life? He was born a man.
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
and so that was the karma of this life, must have been. Right, that's a good idea. So even it can condition masculinity, femininity. I thought these were just the result of previous karma, but can be of karma in this life. And heart base also.
Anything we can understand, as much as we can understand.
Any rupas. Okay, yeah. I thought it was just by way of supporting the results of other karma, but it can condition the...
When it's strong karma, strong enough to produce result in this life.
Even though it's weaker karma, but it can bring a result.
So weak and strong,
of that degree.
It's the weakest karma in the sense that it's just the first jhāvana citta. So it's the weakest karma that it can only bring a result in this life, not in other lives. But that weaker karma that can only bring a result in this life can still be strong enough that it can condition eye senses, results. Masculinity, femininity, results like this.
Yeah, I found it. Pandita the novice. If you find Dhammapada Atthagata, there's a whole long story about Pandita the novice. In past lives, apparently, he liked fish, red fish, and so it was suitable for his body. And red fish in this life supported to make the body calm, developing samatha. And he asked Sariputta, "I need red fish." And Sariputta went out and found some for him, but in the meantime, he attained arahatship already. Anyway, my example was, because of that example, should we all start eating red fish? People take these examples. Someone was saying there's a monk who held up his hand and then he realized he didn't have sati sampajana, so he put it back and lifted his hand again.
And what about other monks or novices?
They didn't need red fish.
Who didn't like red fish?
Yeah. Well, exactly. That was my whole point. But I'm just saying there's examples like this.
What about ahara sappaya?
Yes, that is... Right. That's what it is, obviously.
It's like the congee example, so eating congee.
But it doesn't depend on red fish.
Doesn't this prove the same point about how it's not a matter of the patana or the forest or the red fish?
Well, except that I would say patana is part of hearing Dharma, so hearing Dharma is one condition for right understanding to grow.
No need. Because he had attained arahatta before having it.
Yeah, he didn't actually need the red fish in the end. When his mother was conceived, she had the wish, "Oh, might I give the best red fish to 500 monks headed by Sariputta." Then she had the baby and so on. I don't know if you want to look into it in detail.
And what's the moral of the teaching?
I guess it's not red fish is the best for us, no.
The variety of the accumulation of each one.
Yeah. The different conditions.
And that is actually the same answer to going to the forest or reading the patana. It's just different accumulations.
But it doesn't give the answer of the guy by the Ganges who's still alive holding up his hand, right? this is not the same element, because that holding up the hand for 32 years is just pure
wrong
view.
It doesn't matter as long as is there an understanding of reality right now, no matter in what position.
Maybe if you go talk Gamma to him, but he can't put his hand down anymore. It's still there.
I'm sure he can't. Yeah.
I think, Rob, you would say that, obviously, if you're reading a Dhamma book, for example, even if you embarked on that with the wrong view, there'd still be a chance that by reading it, there'd be some understanding of Dhamma.
Mm-hmm.
Is that how you feel about it?
Yeah, I just think there's a difference in activity. Some activities demonstrate severe wrong view. Some have got more chance of being on the right track. That's what I think. Some activities, like reading an Abhidharma book.
How does it help to classify activities in that way? Isn't it more important to understand what wrong view and right view is?
Well, that's what the Abhidharma tends to do. That's why I think in that way. But I see that people read Abhidharma and don't get anywhere. So they need to be pointed out about the present moment and
reality.
Anyway, I thought it was interesting about the red fish. Don't you think so?
Not the blue? Only
red
the red?
Red fish is apparently very good taste.
Clinging.
Well, the novice couldn't have been clinging, would he? Because
they must be clinging as long as it hasn't been eradicated yet.
But wasn't that the right thing for him to do?
For him?
Yes.
Or for who?
For him only.
It depends, see? Each one is different.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, my point to bring up that overall is that people see examples of monks in the old days living very ascetic lives in the jungle, say, and they think, right, I will copy that behaviour. And they see nothing wrong with it. They are surprised when we say, why not try to understand life as it is now? So I point out the example of the redfish and I say, that monk... redfish was one of the conditions for him to attain arahatship. But you wouldn't believe that you should eat redfish, right? And they say, of course not. That's obviously not some sort of behaviour. So that's my point.
And it shows that having redfish or not, it doesn't matter because that monk had attained enlightenment.
Well, yeah. It loses its punchline a bit because by the time Saraputta got back, he was already an arahat. Yeah, it did destroy my punchline a bit, yeah. It's a pity about it.
Would have been better if he hadn't been.
Yeah, if he just waited and had the first morsel and then became, it would have been much better.
I don't think that helps the case of, because people look at the fact that the Buddha and Sariputta attained all the jhana levels before enlightenment.
Yeah.
It doesn't help them to understand that by the same token, they don't need to attain jhana.
But the point is that if one follows any activity with an idea that it is the activity that will bring the result, that it is the activity that is the important factor in the development of understanding, whether it is studying Pali, reading Patana, going to the forest, that is the problem, because it's not understanding at this moment.
That takes you away from understanding.
It takes you away, and that's why when one gets into arguments about the situation and this being the right or the wrong, it never gets anywhere, because it's not understanding at the present moment. And it just depends on accumulations. Some people with understanding will go to the forest or stand on one leg or eat red fish. Others with understanding will study the Patana and Pali. So it's the understanding now, the seeing, the hearing now that's important.
What about not red fish but coffee?
Coffee? Is there an example in the Tipitaka? No.
Now?
Yeah, coffee works for me every time, I'm sure. Yeah, I know our hardship.
You don't need red fish.
Did I have it right about what I said, Ajahn?
Just bring me
red fish, yeah.
Okay, and that's all. But it can be anything.
Kanji is another one featured a lot in the...
Right. As a suitable food.
Yeah. Lots of monks became enlightened after eating.
Right, lunch. Right. Yeah, yeah, they did.
Or not overeating. It's the same thing, just whatever is sapaya. Not overeating and becoming drowsy. back on karma, and actually we had some discussion about killing, and last time we were talking about killing and how Sotapanna won't kill because there's no wrong view, there's no idea that one can take another's life. Anyway, there's an understanding of
no
karma.
No need. Anyone has to die, no need to kill.
Everyone has to die. And also,
you can just be patient and wait for
and also one understands the result of death now is one's own deeds, not the deeds of another. So in that sense, one could say there's no killing anyway because death comes about as a result of one's own...
No usefulness, no need to kill anyone because all are dhammas, arisen from conditions.
So I'd like to just read out this small passage from the Brahmajala commentary. The killer is the assemblage of formations conventionally called a being, containing the aforementioned formations volition of killing. As we know, no killer, no being, just various sankhara dharmas. That which is killed, in inverted commas, by him is the aggregation of material and immaterial dharmas that would have been capable of arising in continued succession if the aforementioned means killing had not been applied, but which now continues as a bare procession of material dharmas conventionally termed the dead. Now, we know that actually the chuti-chitta is just conditioned by past karma.
The same karma as patisandhi.
Same karma as patisandhi. So when it says that which is killed by him, the khandas, the nama and rupa dharmas that would have arisen without the killing, what does this mean? Because the cause of the chuti-chitta is one's own karma. So why does it refer to it in this way?
And what will condition next life?
Will be one's own karma. So it's always one's own
karma.
Can
it be healing?
Yes, the intention to kill and the killing itself, the harming of the other. But, for example, let's say I have the intention to kill, or conventionally we say I kill the mosquito now. This is how we speak conventionally. So, yes, the karma involved will bring its own result. But actually, we think that I have killed the mosquito, but in fact, the cause of the death in the mosquito, its chuti-chitta, is a result of its own past karma. So what does it mean in terms of paramattha dharmas when it says that that which would have arisen if...
That is karma, the intention to kill.
The intention to kill, yes. But actually the death which seems to follow the death of the mosquito is not the result of my deed at all, but the way it reads here, it makes it sound as though it is, but this is, I think, just conventionally speaking. So even when one reads the commentary detail, it depends how
follow
it's
you. So
when we're talking about vipaka, seeing, hearing, and all that, it's not just karma, but there's also upanisya pachaya for causing the result,
many,
not just karma.
Pachaya,
many,
to condition.
So maybe that's just upanisya
pachaya. But the actual cause... The actual cause is always
the
karma.
Karma.
Yeah, it's always the karma.
Karma.
One's
but
own
also
karma.
Also other conditions as upanisya.
Well, of course I have to be, but the real cause is karma.
Yes.
Are you saying this is not quite right?
Let's just keep it very simple. Let's just say the cause of death is karma. And so even though there is the intention to kill and the striking, which is akusala karma pata that will bring results, in fact, it's a wrong view that thinks that that is the cause of death of the being, because the cause of the death of that being is its own karma.
What about that person died without killing?
Then still...
You can understand that?
Yeah, easy.
So this is the same?
The same. So it's exactly the same. So the cause of death is always karma, regardless of what the other person did or whatever, regardless of the floods or...
So I get a hammer or whatever, and there's a mosquito, and I squash the mosquito.
It's your own karma.
Yeah, but presumably that mosquito may have lived a bit longer if I hadn't done that, right?
Or it's time. to die without being hit.
Depends on
or God. Not, though, right? Mm-hmm. So there must be some relationship, I'm assuming. It's cutting it short, isn't it? That's what it's saying here.
Whose karma? Hitting it.
Mine.
So it will produce result.
Yes.
But that one died anyway.
But not at that time, maybe.
By its karma.
Anyway.
It couldn't die if it didn't have the appropriate karma to die.
But it seems to be saying here that you are cutting it short in the commentary, right?
That which is killed is the nama and rupa khandhas, the dharmas, that would have been capable of arising if the killing had not been applied. So here it's suggesting that the namas and rupas of the mosquito would have arisen if there hadn't been my intention, the intention.
How do you know that?
That's what the commentary
because the commentary says.
That's is that the Buddha Ghosa or is that the sub-commentary?
This is the sub-commentary. So it's
the Tika.
Yeah.
Tika to the Brahmajala Sutta.
Yeah, what about other flies or mosquito?
They keep
living. They died.
They died soon.
Being killed.
Or maybe we shouldn't be assuming what would have happened or not happened. If it's happened, then we know that it's because of that person's own karma, and that's it. And not assume that if somebody didn't kill, it would not have happened. It's happened because of karma.
Yeah, that's it. But it's just an example about whatever one reads, whatever detailed commentary or sub-commentary.
I'm still not sure that it's wrong, though.
It's not wrong, but one has to know whether one is talking conventionally or it depends how it's understood. Because one knows the condition of death is karma, not the other's act of killing or hurting.
Well, except as Sukhin explained, there's many other conditions necessary to support that vipaka to arise, right?
Okay, let me put that as a question then. For that mosquito, or the khandhas we call the mosquito to die, we can say the chuti-chita is conditioned by past karma, and that past karma has to have supporting conditions. There has to be upanisya pachya. Included in that upanisya pachya, can we refer to the deeds of the other person that swatted it?
Do you think that the death consciousness can arise without karma as condition?
No, that's all.
What about when karma expires? The karma to keep someone alive expires.
How come death consciousness? By accident or what?
No, never by accident.
It's a result.
But those other factors, for example, the...
Many factors, conventionally. Conventional factors.
So conventionally we can say, besides karma, the flood in Thailand or the hitting... or the car accident, or all these other things conventionally, but in terms of actual paramattha dharma causes, the only cause of death is karma and upanisya pachya. And if we're talking about the upanisya pachya, then upanisya pachya is not the act of another person or the flood, it is the previous.
What is meant by upanisya pachya?
The decisive support.
Which means?
Which means other accumulations, past accumulations.
Any reality.
Right, realities only.
Even intention to kill is pakatupanisya pajya as well, not only kama pajya.
So past lobha dosa, intention to kill, thinking, memory, but when we talk about the other person's act or the flood. This is just an idea, isn't it? It's not upanisya pachya.
Yeah, but what I was referring to was there must be some dharma, which is upanisya pachya. I wasn't referring to the deed. And I was wondering whether there was some dharma which was upanisya pachya.
Can we say that all dharmas are pakatupanisya?
And maybe this idea about cutting short is from the standpoint of the person who committed the deed, that he has the intention of cutting short.
Yeah.
Right.
Are we trying to understand the conventional dharma, not the absolute reality?
Both.
both at the same time.
It could never be understood through conventional, like when one has an idea of another person killing or a flood, one can never understand anything to do with karma and chuti. So even support condition, like the experiencing of hardness or the thinking about hardness, can be support condition, but that has nothing to do with another person or floods, because these are just ideas, aren't they? So at the moment of being hit, there is the experiencing of hardness, but again, it's a result of karma. Question about kalapas as object of understanding, because now we talk about kalapas of rupas, groups of rupas arising together. So we're talking about a concept about realities arising together. But is kalapa always a concept, or is kalapa, when it's referred to as an object of insight?
What do you mean by kalapa?
By kalapa, I mean a group of rupas that arises together, so we know that there are always...
Inseparable,
always at least 8 rupas in a group, in a kalapa. But it seems that kalapa itself, the word kalapa, is always a concept.
No.
So
we have to use the word in order to understand that. Otherwise, how can we talk about the 8 rupas in a kalapa?
Right. So we know...
It's not just the word, it's the idea of kalapa itself.
If we don't use kalapa, but there they are.
Yes.
So how can we understand what we mean?
Mm-hmm. Yes, they are, and I'm wondering, I mean, I've not thought about it, but I'm wondering that we know rupa and we know nama, and where does kalapa fit in? What is kalapa?
Is there any taste or flavor?
Yes, taste is a reality.
So, where is it?
Where is it also a concept? Where
no.
It is?
Where is it? Without the 4 primary rupas, can there be taste?
No.
So it's there.
Yes, it's conditioned by the 4 primary rupas.
No matter you call it what, but it's there.
So let's say at this moment, visible object is appearing through the eye sense, and we know that at the moment when visible object is appearing, it couldn't arise, it couldn't appear if it wasn't supported by the other rupas, including taste. So we know that certain rupas have to always arise to support another rupa, but at the moment of understanding, only visible object is seen. At the moment of tasting, only tasting is experience. So we understand theoretically that the other rupas have to arise together, but this is just thinking.
But why do we talk about the 4 primary rupas, not only 28 rupas? Mm-hmm. No mentioning about primary rupas. Mm-hmm. But since the other rupas besides the 4 depend on the 4
primary. There have to be the primaries to condition the others. So when there is understanding of a rupa, whether it's a primary or derived rupa, we know they depend on each other and have to appear. But we can understand theoretically that they must arise together.
Because we are not Buddha.
You're right. So what does it mean to actually directly understand kalapa?
Not together. Impossible. Just one at a time.
So actually kalapa is always
from one by one, you know that they are there together.
So when it refers to understanding of kalapa, this is what is meant by understanding one by one,
right.
So one realizes they must arise together.
So this kalapa comes from the understanding of the nature of a rupa and the fact that it's conditioned by at least 7 other rupas. So it's the understanding of
7
this.
Or 4?
4 plus the 3. I mean, it's conditioned by the 4. And it is, okay, conditioned by the 4. And it is from this understanding that the understanding about kalapa is derived. So it's
in that understanding. So the object is always a reality and the understanding that it's conditioned.
For example, a tiny piece of meat, when you touch what appears and when you taste from that particular very small piece, but when you taste, it's another rupa. The smell is a rupa, but they are all there.
So kalapa is actually the object of understanding. The idea, the reality of kalapa is the object
of
understanding.
They are real. And one by one, the object can be experienced, not all together.
What I understand is it's by the development of understanding of different rupas, one by one, over and over again, that it becomes apparent that they have to arise together, they have to be supported together. In the beginning, if there's just understanding of visible object or just understanding of sound, it's not apparent, but by being aware repeatedly of different rupas, then it becomes more and more apparent how they have to arise together. So that's what's meant by the understanding of kalapas. But it's only ever one rupa that appears. Something on karma and jhana cittas. We know that for someone who has attained jhanas, if the ability hasn't declined, like Devadatta, then if the ability hasn't declined, there will be conditions just before death for those jhana cittas to arise and to bring their results in rupa or brahma planes. I've always wondered why the jhana cittas arise in those cases just before death. Can one just say, well, it's just by upanishadpatra?
By conditions.
Just by conditions, mm-hmm. That's how it happens.
Just getting back to the topic we were discussing earlier, so can we say, does it seem on a personal experience basis, that there are some situations or activities, if you like, that are better conditioned for the arising of awareness than others?
Only in the sense that one needs background in hearing Dhamma, that's all. That's the only thing I would say. That without having heard Dhamma, there wouldn't be conditions, but other than that, no. But nevertheless, there's no chance of me going to the Ganges and holding my hand up in the air, because I just don't see that as having any usefulness.
Or you're not inclined to do it. I mean, we do lots of things that have no usefulness.
But I just don't believe that's one of the conditions for understanding. Whereas the guy who's doing that thinks he's on the path to enlightenment, right? I don't believe that. I think he's incorrect in his assumption.
But you could be playing tennis and having understanding.
Yes. But if someone says to me, oh, I'm going to go to a 10-day Vipassana retreat and I'm going to concentrate on the breath for 3 days and then feel the sensations in the top of my head and concentrate there, and when I can feel the sensations there, I'm going to go up and down the body. If someone tells me that, I will say, I don't think you understand what understanding is.
Or someone could say, I'm going to the library to read the Tipitaka,
mm-hmm.
to develop more understanding.
That I would not discourage so much.
To develop more understanding.
If someone says, what do you think, I want to go and do a Vipassana retreat for 10 days, I would easily say to them, I think that is not the way. But if someone said, today I'm going to study Abhidharma, what do you think of that? Well, I would say, yeah.
One thing, but with the idea of to develop understanding, I think that's different.
What about if someone says, okay, I'm going to Burma for a year to memorize the Patana and Pali, because I think that one really has to understand Pali in order to understand the teachings.
I wouldn't feel that is as bad as, say, I'm going to do a 10-day Vipassana retreat.
happens if person A comes up to you and says, I'm going away to the forest for a year to go on a meditation retreat, and person B comes to you and says, oh, I'm going to Burma for a year because I'm going to memorize the Patana in Pali. What is your response to these two people?
What made you think that you can gain knowledge by going? What about reality right now? If there is no understanding right now, what about expectation to have it somewhere at some time?
Regardless of the activity.
But don't you think some people are not ready to understand the moment anyway, so learning the Patana may be a condition for future understanding to grow?
Okay. What Patana now?
But if they're not ready...
If there is no understanding of reality, which are Nama and Rupa, how can you understand Patana now? Because Patana is not in the book. Mm. It's just right now. So if there is no understanding of any reality right now, it's impossible to just read and gain the knowledge of Patana from reading. For example, Ayatana. Okay? Where is it? What about now? No understanding of the reality of Ayatana, but talking about the Ayatana, inner and outer Ayatana. Where is it? Not now? It's now. If no one understands it's now, no one understands, no understanding of anything, no matter in the forest or anywhere. So it's not a matter of going somewhere or reading something, but it's the matter of understanding, developing understanding. Reality is not in the book, anytime, anywhere, and right now. When there's right understanding right now, it develops. So what's the object of right understanding? What's the object of Vipassana? And what is the path leading to that point? Understanding the object. Because now there's object appearing without any understanding. If Panya does not develop now.
Now I can imagine someone coming here having a little bit of right understanding, but no conditions to hear further, and going away, and then doing something else, meditating or whatever. But because of this initial right understanding, at some point, just have understanding, even meditation retreat. On the other hand, someone who comes here and listens, and never had a moment of right understanding, comes back because of various other reasons, attachment, and wrong understanding.
Yeah, of course. But do you think the person, if the understanding grew in the meditation retreat, do you think they'd keep going on their meditation retreats?
I doubt it, but it depends again on how much understanding and what the object is.
For example, what's the second truth?
Tanha is the
attachment.
Dukkha, right?
Why go away? At this moment, there is seeing, and this world object. How much there is understanding about this? Without the understanding develops, can there be the experiencing of the arising or falling away of reality? Because Tanha is always there, like the space in between the kalapas. Through six doorways, all the time. Even right now, we are talking about seeing in this world object, but the vitaka moves away all the time to other things.
But also, Sila Bhatta Paramasa is also ready to jump in at any moment. Mm-hmm. So even when one is here or reading Abhidharma, it's already
and understanding
in the
reality with right understanding about the difference between theoretical understanding and the direct awareness and understanding of reality right now.
Dream, a vision.
Now?
When I was a little boy.
Not
and
now?
No.
What appears now?
No.
No vision.
No.
Oh, vision.
Vision.
Different vision.
Yes. Vision.
But it's their vision.
Yes. I had a vision.
Any clinging to it now?
No. No, clinging
to the past experience.
No, clinging to the past experience.
What about wondering what it was?
Wondering what it was is...
Attachment.
Attachment.
But Ivan, you always say it's fallen away.
Okay.
Fallen away. The question about colour, visible object, and back to the Kalapas. So we say now visible object is seen or colour is seen, and we know that colour arises in each Kalapa, so we can talk about the colour of the table, the colour of the rocks. Now, when we talk about what is seen as visible object, but when we talk about the colour of the rocks, we never talk about the visible object of the rock, just the colour of the rocks. Why is this?
So what's the difference between visible object and colour?
No difference.
Mm-hmm. It depends on what word you'd like to use.
I see, that's all. And also, if someone has no sensitivity to light, for example, my friend in a coma has no sensitivity to light, but there is some visible object seen. So is this like in the dark, there is visible object seen?
It's
but
just like that.
Just like that. Mm. And one can't even say it's weaker seeing or anything. It's just what is seen, that's all, nothing else. When it talks in the texts about light and there's some reference to light experienced in jhana and vipassana and how the colour is brighter conditioned by the cittas.
And sanya.
And cittas and sanya. What does it mean, conditioned by sanya at that moment?
Sanya arises with each moment.
Yes, so
each citta. So it's there.
So it's there.
Marks and remember.
So it remembers the light.
Like in a dream.
Like in a dream, I see. Okay, so it may not be the actual rupa, it may just
the actual rupa must be seen.
The actual rupa is seen.
By
right?
Seeing.
Yes. And when it says that materiality produces light in up to 10,000 world systems and refers to Venerable Anuruddha's divine consciousness, Dipa Chakuchita, producing light in 1,000 world systems, what does this mean? Just the result of jhana?
Different quality of chakku and jhana.
Different qualities of chakku, of the sea, of the eyes,
and jhana.
Yeah, and the wisdom of the chakku, the eye sense, you mean?
Yeah, like the Buddha's eye sense.
Like the Buddha's eye sense.
It's different from others.
I see. So the combination of the actual eye sense and the wisdom at that moment. And you mentioned about ayatanas. Nina mentioned a talk you had given on a sutta in Thai about the inner and outer ayatanas. And you mentioned how the inner ayatanas are like a house full of family members and possessions, because we have a lot more attachment to the inner ayatanas, the eye sense, ear sense and so on, than the outer ayatanas. Would you say a little more about
you
this?
Mean the last one, the sixth one?
No,
the citta. Because the chakku vijnana is rupa. It doesn't know anything at all.
The first inner ayatana, eye sense.
It doesn't know anything.
It doesn't know anything. Well, let me just read what it says. Kunsuchin spoke about this particular sutta, and the sutta deals with the inner ayatanas of the senses and the mind. In the sutta, we read about the satisfaction, misery, and way of escape from the eye. The commentary uses a simile to show the amount of attachment we have to the eye and the other senses. So to the eye sense and the...
And what is attached? the lobha arising.
Lobha.
With,
but this is the attachment to the eye sense and the ear sense. So the eye sense doesn't know anything, but we still have a lot of attachment to it. And I had a look afterwards at this sutta and the one after it in the text, but after talking about the inner atomas, then it talks about the outer atomas and the attachment to them. Is it true there is more attachment in a day to the eye sense and the ear sense rather than visible object and sound?
Like now.
Like now?
Exactly.
So then the inner ayatanas are like the house of humans. They have an extraordinarily strong attachment. It's like a house that's full of family members, possessions, food. And nobody is allowed to take any of these away. To what is just outside one's house in the neighborhood, there is less attachment. Even so, there's not as much attachment to visible object in the same way as there is attachment to the inner ayatanas. So if this is so, why do we talk so much more about visible object and sound than to eye sense and ear sense? Is it just because easier to...
Without them, can there be these objects?
No, no.
But if someone was going to poke out your eye, you'd be pretty upset about it.
But when it's the other eyes, you don't mind.
Yeah, not so much. Not quite as much.
What about included here, the cheetahs included in the inner ayatanas? Is this also, is this one reason why eye sense, ear sense and so on are referred to as inner ayatanas, because of the importance?
Because they
to?
Are inner rupa.
Inner rupas. And when it refers to the stronger attachment to the inner ayatanas, is it also including cheetahs as opposed to cheetah seekers?
Lobha clings.
Lobha clings, yes, but can we say that there is more clinging to cheetahs than cheetah seekers?
Everything.
Everything. Mm-hmm. I thought, because before we've had discussions about why cheetah is in ayatana and cheetah seekers out ayatanas, and we've said, well, cheetahs are innermost and cheetahs are the forerunner. Without cheetahs, no cheetah seekers. I thought that maybe a little bit like eye sense and ear sense are considered as like the home and inner in that sense.
Oh, inner rupas.
Inner rupas, that perhaps cheetahs are considered inner in the same sense.
Without them, there's no experiencing of all these objects.
And when it says, when friends say, or when the texts say, the ayatanas are not theory, there are six doorways, the inner ayatanas, and there are the objects, the outer ayatanas, that can be experienced through these doorways. This is a very common comment, and often we read in the texts about the inner ayatanas and their objects, the outer ayatanas. But actually, as we know, it's not completely correct, because we can say visible object is the object, sound is the object, but when it comes to the dhammayatanas, like cheetah seekers and nibbana, one can't say this is the object of cheetahs.
We talk about different ways.
Different ways.
By way of ayatana or by way of aramana.
Right. But often it seems that it's mixed up together. Yeah.
It depends on what we are talking about.
I was just actually that minute wondering whether there were any instances in the suttas where the Buddha responded to someone who said they were going to do X or Y or whatever.
Well, there is the famous sutta, of course, where the Buddha talks about people going into the forest, right? And he says someone might go into the forest because through they're stupid or something, right? Someone might go into the forest through attachment. Someone might go into the forest because the Buddha said it's good. Someone else might go into the forest because it's the thing to do. And it's really the last one that has the right understanding, right? The other three are not quite going for the right reasons. Is that the sort of thing you mean, Tom?
Yeah.
You know that sutta that I mean, Ajahn? Well, Sarah does, she always quotes it. Because it's the right thing for you, it's your accumulations and it's appropriate.
And there was the one about, if it's the forest turns out not to be the suitable place, then leave it or go to another one or something.
I was wondering if that thing to do would be in relation to the person who was developing jhana or something.
I think it's more about their accumulations, but I don't know.
What about Mahasatipatthana Sutta?
Yeah.
Anytime, anywhere, any object.
Yeah. What about in the Visuddhimagga? We've talked about this before. There's a few passages, what's the one about the breath, counting the breath, for example, and taking the right lotus type posture with an erect back and things like that if one wants to develop anapanasati. What's your feeling on those, Jonathan? And the Visuddhimagga recommending that rather than saying develop anywhere.
Just talking about the truth but not about the understanding.
Can you elaborate, Ajahn? What's
just talk about the truth of breath, of position, but not about understanding.
Why do they recommend a certain position? Like
what position suits you?
Me slouching down, lying on the couch.
See. For me sitting cross-legged.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You don't have to follow any pattern at all.
But why does the Visuddhimagga say this is a suitable...
For the Indian people, they always sit like that. The most comfortable posture for them.
Okay. Well, that's it.
Or for anyone who practice or do that from birth.
Okay.
Not try to do.
What about counting breaths then? How does that help?
It just depends. If you concentrate on one thing, then vitakka does not move you away.
Okay.
That's all. This is the understanding, not the pattern.
And this is about jhana?
About citta, focusing. And so it depends on understanding. If anyone who does not have any understanding about kusala citta and akusala citta, what about counting breath?
What's the time?
It will bring moha. No understanding.
No, my question is this thing in the Visuddhimagga, what is it talking about?
It says for the beginner in Anapanasati, they can start by counting the breaths.
Under the samadhi, right?
Under samadhi, yeah.
Not
samadhi,
background.
I think what it says that people pick up on is they should.
Well, that's kind of how it reads. It's with a little bit. I mean, I can see why people think they should do that.
And no understanding about detachment at all.
Yeah.
See?
The Visuddhimagga is sort of assuming the person really has the accumulations and knows what kusala and akusala is, right? They're not going into details. This is for the person with the right accumulations, but people just, I can do that. That's something I can follow. That's easy enough to follow. So they grasp onto that, I think, and, you know, I can do that one, two, now I'm doing Anapanasati, which they're not.
But actually it's lopa.
Yeah, exactly. They're going the wrong way.
Even 1, 2, 3.
Yeah. I mean, people like to have some sort of set thing they can follow. They read the Tipitaka, and if they read it carefully, there's no... You know, the Buddha's not describing some technique you can do vipassana by at all. There's no technique in the Satipatthana Sutta. So they go to the Visuddhimagga, they see counting breaths. Oh, well, that's something. Finally, I can get my teeth around that and start doing the real deal instead of all this thinking about Abhidharma.
And what likes techniques?
Well, of course, lopa. We're looking for a shortcut.
Unknowingly.
Yeah.
Unseen.
that's what I was saying before about, you were saying Tanha is like the space between the kalapas, it's omnipresent. But Silabhata Paramasa is always waiting for we Buddhists. It's sort of in the background for anything we're doing too, right? Because Buddhists want to progress and, you know, get more pure and everything, so it's always waiting to come out.
Can we say that Buddhist?
Well, anyone who starts off in Buddhism, they soon seem to develop a lot of tanha
for
results.
When one
studies
wrongly, can one be Buddhist?
Buddhist in the conventional sense.
Right. Wrong Buddhist?
Even though the whole thing, you know, the second noble truth, as you brought up before, is about tanha, but people don't think tanha applies to their path of trying to get quick results. They think,
you're right. We don't think we're the ones who have Silabhata Paramasa.
All right.
Mm.
Not quite. It applies more. Silabhata Paramasa seems to focus around Buddhists, in the sense, you know, looking for shortcuts.
And what was your point about Einstein in that note? Were you suggesting he had panya, or that he must have had past panya too?
Well, Dharma, that guy wrote me a question about that, about Einstein. So I brought it up with Ajahn. He mentioned Einstein.
But were you suggesting that he must have had panya?
Oh, I thought, yeah. My question is, someone like Einstein, although he's always lopa, 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 to be born so intelligent, conventionally, I would have thought he would...
Intelligence is not panya.
No, but I would have thought he wouldn't be single-rooted, for example. You know, they talk about the three roots. We're born with three roots, two roots, or one root.
Two roots.
Oh, yeah, three roots or two roots, right?
Yeah.
What about the handicapped person?
No roots.
Sorry, three roots, two roots, and no roots. I'm guessing Einstein was not no-rooted, right? This would be my guess.
And you, not no-rooted.
We're not no-rooted. No one here is no-rooted, yeah.
Okay, why? How do you know that?
Because we're not handicapped or deformed.
Okay.
But you're saying that he must have had panya to...
I was speculating possibly he was three-rooted, even though in this life no panya arising, but I thought someone like him might have been born three-rooted. That's what I was speculating on. Because of his deep worldly wisdom, possibly indicative of some sort of something like that. Am I going too far? But not panya in this life. But I thought...
Should we say worldly knowledge? Because...
Even so, it cannot be worldly, because worldly is the panya which understands citta, chetasika, and rupa,
right, but it's
the
not
world.
Panya of any kind.
It's not panya. It's
but Ajahn, you've said in the past, I think, that if people don't...
People use the term without the direct understanding of the teachings.
But you said if someone, say, is born with the three roots or something like that, that if they don't go on to study Satipatthana, they might be clever in their normal life, you know, they might be clever in business and so on and things like that, but they won't develop understanding.
What about Manasikara? It's not panya.
Mm.
But it knows how to have such and such.
Is this all intelligence in heart?
And Lopa can be very smart. And Lopa is smart.
So we can't say anything about panya in this regard.
Okay.
Khunsa Chin, when you've talked before about the two kinds of space, akasa, rupa, I don't want to go into all the details, but it's an area that is extremely difficult for other people who've studied the Abhidharma to appreciate. Now, one question I have is with regard to the arupa jhanas, the akasana, akasanchayatana, the arupa jhana with sphere of boundless space as object. But the Arupa Jhanas are not connected with rupas, but yet it seems that it is this Akasa Rupa as object. Is that correct?
The citta which has the Akasa.
Yes.
Is the Arupa Vajra Jhana.
Arupa Vajra Jhana, yes. And the object of it is this Akasa, the second kind of Akasa, the empty space, that is the object. So it seems that it is, if we're saying that that is Akasa Rupa, the second kind of Rupa, as opposed to just a, is it the concept of that Rupa that is the object then?
Before that, there is idea of something all the time. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to Akasa, nothing is there.
Nothing is there. But if we say that nothing...
In that sense, no Rupa.
No Rupa. And yet we are saying that in this open space, like in the sky, actually it's not nothing because it is Akasa Rupa.
The Akasa Rupa itself is that which has nothing in it.
Which has nothing in it, right, okay. So here it is the object is the Rupa which has nothing in it.
When there is the Akasa as the object, it is the Rupa Jhana, right?
Yes.
But when it understands that there is nothing, even Akasa,
yes,
it's given away, given up, no idea of thought about it anymore.
I see.
As something like Akasa.
I see. Then it is the Arupa,
Arupa Jhana.
So the difference between space, Akasa, as object of the Rupa Jhana, and this one, because usually when we say it is Akasa as the object of the Rupa Jhana, this is the first kind of Rupa, like the Paricheda.
That's the idea of Akasa, right, for the Rupa Jhana.
Right.
But higher than that,
yes,
even Akasa is not there. Nothing is there.
Nothing is there. Can one say the first one is the first kind of Akasa, and this is the second kind, the empty
because,
one?
Because you see that Akasa is the Rupa, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when there is no Akasa,
yes,
it is Arupa.
It is Arupa, right. So it is the empty space then.
No, but still, I mean, I thought that the second kind of empty space is still Rupa.
It's still Rupa.
So mm-hmm. Ajahn is saying it's not even that.
Mm-hmm. But the second kind of Rupa is the empty, like the vacuum, like there is nothing there. Mm-hmm. Nothing in the vacuum, right?
Well, vacuum is still Rupa.
So is that what it is?
Are we trying to reach that stage?
Yeah.
Vitaka always...
The reason I'm asking is because some friends like Chu, they cannot accept about empty space. They say this is just a concept, an idea. So I thought this may be an example indicating how this is different from the object of Rupa Jhana.
We can help the others to have no doubt about realities at all. So the best way is trying to help them to understand realities.
Yes.
That's all.
Is Akasa Asabhava Rupa?
Asabhava.
It is Asabhava.
Elaborate, please. Asabhava.
I mean, without Asabhava, without characteristics.
This is one of Jonathan's points. From the commentary to the Satipatthana Sutta, this reflection by way of mindfulness directed bodywards called the reflection of repulsiveness is unknown to non-Buddhists in the form of subject of meditation, kamatana, bhavana, vasena. Hence it's a thing which comes into being when a Buddha arises, not at other times. Reflection on repulsiveness, asubha. Is this correct? It's only an object of
Samatha.
Samatha, when one has heard, when one has understood dharmas.
When there is no reality, appears an object, it is samatha.
Right, yes. But the question is, as object of samatha, here it is saying that it's unknown to those who are not Buddhists, who haven't developed an understanding of the teachings.
It does mean that Buddhists or non-Buddhists, but it depends on understanding, whether there is the understanding of reality at that moment of that level of samatha or not.
I see. Okay. So it's not saying that asubha cannot mm-hmm. be an object of for those yeah. who have developed samatha.
Is this asubha the same asubha that is related to the other three characteristics, anicca, dukkha, and anatta?
In the other sense, not the same sense. This
not the
is
same
about
sense.
The dead body.
Okay.
Oh, yes, this is about the dead body, about the contemplation of the corpses, I think. But with regard to contemplation of corpses and reflection on repulsiveness, it can be an object of samatha, whether or not one has heard anything about
it. Depends on kusala citta or akusala citta.
Right, it just depends on. Yeah. But when it says here in the commentary that it refers to reflection on repulsiveness unknown to non-Buddhists in the form of kamatana bhavana, it must be just referring to satipatthana then.
No.
No.
Even non-Buddhists are Buddhists. If there is no kusala citta which understands at that level of being calm, it's not calm.
I see.
It doesn't mean that I'm Buddhist, so I
have
an object, so it's calm.
No, I just wondered if it meant that before the Buddha's teaching, whether it was suggesting that that object couldn't be object
of satipatthana,
no,
but of samatha is or
it can,
yeah.
Yes.
We know that
to the wise
Buddha,
one.
Buddha with the Buddha's qualities as objects, that couldn't have existed
right.
before, and we know that also the manusati. Is there anything else of the different objects of meditation which only
ask those people? Even right now, to know whether there is calm or no calmness at all depends on understanding of that level.
Yes, but we know that there are two different kinds of understanding. We know that there are two different kinds of understanding. All these are
okay. For samatha, it understands the citta, which is
calm.
Right, kusala
right.
or not kusala.
Right, and some of these, as the ones I mentioned, those two. Could not have been practiced before the Buddha.
Why not?
The
yeah,
Buddha.
Buddha, Dharma, Sangha.
Because there is no Buddha. Only other objects.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All the other objects.
I don't think about that, whether all or not all, but it has to be Panya at that moment, which can understand moment of kusala and moment of akusala. Otherwise,
yes.
even the object is mentioned, but it can be no understanding, no calmness at all.
I mean, and besides, all involve understanding calm, understanding kusa. Okay.
What about anusati? Sila anusati?
Yeah.
And so far? And the last one is upasama anusati, about nibbana or calmness of that degree.
Mm.
Impossible.
Possible.
For them. We have to talk about one by one. Maranasati, all right. Asupa and kasina, death.
About the nibbana one, you know, the nibbana.
No understanding of calmness of nibbana.
This one only Aryans would know.
Not even Aryan, but those who understand the difference between the Sankhara Dhamma and Visankhara Dhamma can see the difference. What about not being born again, no sufferings at all, no seeing which will bring more and more attachment and karma and kilesa? Thinking about no more seeing with panya, not blind. No more seeing, no more attachment, no more story about what is seen. Is it not calm?
Doesn't appear.
Until not everything does not arise at all. No arising of anything. Just no arising, see? That's why the arising is dukkha. Is it calm at that moment?
Well, it would be. But if I think of...
It's not developed yet, yeah. But it's there.
So
to
we
be
can...
accumulated on and on until it's clear.
Even beginning to understand in theory how calm it is to reflect like this is a... When one begins to understand how seeing and hearing now is nothing but trouble and...
Trouble caused by seeing, hearing and so on.
Caused by the attachment and ignorance that follows immediately.
Which cause many...
All the problems.
Many gilesa.
And all the problems in life. Without ignorance and attachment following seeing and hearing now, no dukkha. But because of the attachment, as soon as there's seeing, as soon as there's hearing, so one begins to appreciate that seeing and hearing now is so unsatisfactory, so useless, because it's just followed by attachment on and on and on. Wanting this, wanting that, clinging to more seeing, clinging to particular sights, to particular sounds. We think it's wonderful to see and hear, but actually it's dukkha, because whatever is seen, whatever is heard, falls away instantly. So there's clinging all day to what falls away, and grief when it isn't how we'd like it to be. From the moment we wake up, clinging to what is seen and heard and experienced through the senses.
And why do so often we forget all that we see?
Because of the strong accumulated ignorance and attachment and so little wisdom arising in a day, there's forgetfulness almost all day long.
We focus on attachment, not dosa.
With no attachment, no dosa. Usually we actually focus on the dosa, what we don't like. Everyone wants to get rid of the dosa, but the problem is the attachment, the clinging, as soon as we wake up.
And I think you're not just talking about the attachment now, but even vipaka is due to attachment in the past.
Yeah. Could you say that in the crisis of water last time in Thailand, could we say that it's a akusala vipaka for Thailand?
Wow.
You know, because
it's just a long story about floods and Thailand and people. Actually, the vipaka is just this moment of seeing now, this moment of hearing now. We can't even say, like, even if you're in the house which is being flooded, who can say whether there's akusala vipaka from moment to moment? A moment of seeing visible object, who can say whether it's akusala vipaka? So it's just an idea we have. This is vipaka, this is kusala, this is akusala. Actually, seeing is just seeing. It just sees visible object. It doesn't matter what it sees. The problem is not the moments of seeing or hearing. The problem is the attachment and ignorance that follows the seeing instantly.
And I think, as you were saying earlier, about understanding karma without understanding reality actually is a problem if you don't understand karma and vipaka in terms of reality and think in terms of situations and concepts. It can be very misleading.
You can go all through life thinking the problems in our life are the weather, the floods, the politicians, the housing conditions, other people, but actually the only problems in life, the moments of attachment and ignorance, and particularly wrong view that arises now.
Are you sure that there can be right understanding of the danger of reality which arises at the moment when it arises? Possible?
Yes.
But not probable.
Probable in terms of future lifetime, not this lifetime.
Sometimes.
It has to be when it's the developed vanya.
I think that the more understanding of realities there is, the more understanding there is of seeing or visible object or hearing or sound now, the more understanding develops, the more it has to begin to see the danger, those realities.
When it arises, see.
Because it begins to see more and more that it is those realities that are the problem in life, not the conventional stories or the ideas, but the very moment of seeing and hearing and like, dislike.
So it's not a matter of forest or redfish. Or the world. That's why we study, in order to have more confidence on panya, which can arise and experience reality right now and understand better and better about the danger of the
conditioned
realities. Otherwise, one like to go somewhere and have some other experience instead of develop understanding of reality right now, because seeing is the same no matter where and when. And we will begin to understand the ayatana better, because when we talk about seeing and the four ayatana, the visible object, and the eye sense, and the citta and cetasika, nothing is there at all, no world. So one object is object of understanding, developing, on and on, from time to time. So no doubt about experiencing reality as it is at this moment.
So just getting back to what we began with today, and before you came in we were talking about hearing the Dhamma as a condition for understanding, and the voice of another, right? Mm-hmm. Was, I forget the Pali, something, Parita Gosa or something.
Parita Gosa.
Thank you. So I guess thinking of a question from Robert's point of view, he might wonder whether there are some things, some activities or things that are more likely to result in hearing the Dhamma than other